Hello and welcome back to Polliver, a BMX podcast with Chris Doyle. We are coming to you from 30,000 feet in the sky on board a private jet. More on that in a second, but the first thing I want to do is introduce my co-host for today's interview, Mr. Christopher Bennett. My loyal listeners will know that Chris was my first interview when I started this podcast, so really the guy to help me set it all in motion. So, Chris, thank you for being a part of this.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome back to
Absolutely.
The program.
Yeah. As you put it, we went from, I think the first one was in my basement. It was in my basement. And now we're on a private jet, so.
We grew pretty rapidly. So, my subject today is Mr. George Polichek. That's not a name you might not be familiar with that name, but George was a Western Pennsylvania trail kid who grew up in the Pittsburgh scene. He had his own trails, dedicated to building trails and riding. He got a good bit of coverage in videos and in magazines, and really had the skill and the style and the personality of a guy that really seemed like he was going to be around for a long, long time. But it seemed like in the early millennium, he just kind of fell off the face of the earth, and we never really knew what happened to George. Well, through the wonderful world of social media, we've recently reconnected, and we found out George is a corporate private pilot who literally jet sets around the globe. And I loved his story from how he went from being just a trail kid to being a corporate pilot to doing what he's doing now. I found it to be really interesting. I thought you guys might find it interesting as well. And so I figured we'd sit down and do an interview. And he set up this whole day for us on the plane, on the ground, in the hangar. And I got to give a big shout out to Berg Brothers Media as well for handling the production on all this. Shout out to them for all the help here. And sit back, relax, and enjoy. This is George Polichek.
All right, George Polichek, welcome to my little podcast, which today doesn't feel so little, thanks mainly to you. Why don't you tell the people who you are and what you do?
Thank you for the good intro. I'm George Polichek, and we're sitting here at an airplane hangar, and I'm a corporate pilot, and Chris is a very good friend, and Chris is another very good friend, and they want to know about BMX and what I do for a living.
Well, yeah.
So it's pretty evident that we fly airplanes.
that you fly airplanes.
Right.
We were
in the plane
passengers. But I hung out with you a few days ago. You came out to Hazelwood Trails, to check them out. You said it had been, 20 years since you were at a set of trails? Talk a little bit about your history in BMX.
So history, it starts back when I was 10.
Let me kind of rephrase the question. We all kind of start out like we get interested in BMX, of course, most like any other kids, but more about the time that you started to become passionate about BMX.
Probably when I started riding to the South Park BMX track when I was around 14 years old. I would say that's a lot of passion to ride that far, to want to ride with other people that are good and to meet new people and experience new things. So I would say,
I think you should definitely explain how far you rode to get to the BMX track.
So it would take you about 35 minutes in a car.
Yeah.
So it would take about 4 hours by bike.
And you would ride your bike, you and your friends.
With my friends, yes.
And I mean, I'll say the names in case people from locally can appreciate that you rode from Bentleyville to South Park.
Correct.
On your bicycle, yes. BMX bicycle.
Single speed
BMX bicycle.
20-inch BMX bike.
Pittsburgh locals will appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. That is a haul. Didn't you say like you were riding on some like pretty gnarly back roads where you were like fighting off animals?
Yeah, and it's two-lane road. So, thank God people didn't have cell phones back then, texting and shit like that. You know what I mean? It was gnarly to leave your house at 6-7 in the morning. Your parents probably had no idea. I know mine didn't, where right. I was at, what I was doing. I just had to be home by dark. So we would, you know, chat about it the night before and figure everything out and head out on.
Now, this is like mid-90s, I'm guessing.
Yeah, 94.
Okay. And this is the Pittsburgh scene. So
right.
You were aware of, like, you have this big scene coming up around you.
And I found that all by riding to the BMX track.
Just to be with other locals and other right. people that were, like, into BMX.
I grew up near Justin Short, which I think had something to do with Push and Stig.
He and Stig started that.
Started the t-shirt. I think he had something to do with the t-shirt end of things.
Yeah.
But I never really asked much because he kind of faded into the distance. But, yeah, in the beginning,
That was it at the beginning. Yeah. Justin and Stig started the whole thing. Yeah,
would ride to South Park just to be around these guys, and then you would, you know, other people would go down there, and you would go down there, and you would get to ride and experience that whole culture, which, you know, was pretty crazy.
Which was pretty legendary.
Yeah, I mean, I would say iconic.
Yeah.
Did you realize at the time? You think it was just?
It was just something.
I was just the nearby scene, nearby. 4 hour away by bike scene.
My mother during school would drive my friends in a van and then she would turn the lights on so we could ride the first straight at the BMX track at night.
That's awesome.
Because we needed to get gate practice. So two kids would hold the gate up and then, you know, because everybody starts riding and wanting to race. Yeah. So that's how I would race and then after racing go down to Push and then there were trails up above it that you could ride also.
So you got to ride Push trails?
Yes.
Lucky
and
bastard.
That's how I met Chris.
Yeah.
And okay. Everyone else.
Chris, do you remember much about George being at Push?
I do, yeah. I mean, as much as I remember.
Quiet.
Yeah, he was a quiet kid. I remember him though.
Well, Push doesn't seem like the type of place you go in there running your mouth. Like, it seems like be quiet, be humble, mind your manners.
Yep. Smile and talk when talking. You know, it's the last one.
Speak when spoken to.
That's it.
All right. So you said you remember George from riding Push.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you ride like 819 or anything like that?
Yes.
Okay.
So from going there, Hummel and Punjab. Von Stout, Sailor, Haber, mm-hmm. I think it is.
Scott Haber, yeah.
They all had this place in the middle of the field. There was very little tree cover.
Right in the field.
It was hot. And they would have like a jam. I remember being like 15 or 16 and getting a ride there and eight pack berm.
Yeah.
Like two sets out of a berm. But they were big. I mean,
kind
of like the Porsche eight pack, I think.
Yeah, same big. Same style. Yeah. I think that was like Brandon and Hummel and those guys kind of. It was definitely inspired a lot by Push.
Of course. Well, what could go on in BMX in this area that wasn't inspired by Push?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we're similar in age. I would have loved to have ridden Push and to ridden 819. But you had mentioned also, like, you went to Woodward as a kid as well?
Yes. So in that 14, 15 range, during the summer, I asked to go to camp because I didn't want to play sports anymore. So my parents always thought that I should have something to do for a week. So they shipped me to Woodward for a week.
That's great. And there were some pretty iconic dudes that you were rooming with.
That was like the golden era of Woodward.
That was when like you could go to Woodward and your counselor would be like Joe Rich.
Like Taj or something. Yeah.
Joe Rich was your counselor?
I don't remember who the exact was, but I know that in my cabin was Van Homan, Daryl Nall, and Garrett Burns. Some just, pretty iconic.
Yeah. Right.
So it was pretty cool to be in the same bunk, but really you had no idea.
You don't know what these guys are going to become.
Yeah,
because you're
hammer, shin guards, Rector knee pads,
twos and threes, three
bar spins, and sweaty kids, and
When I went to
those are some of the best memories.
Oh yeah,
and I met, believe it or not, two kids from Pittsburgh here, there,
Kansas. At Woodward.
Yeah, at Woodward. That's how I met the Egg and Chad.
Well, I had in my notes here how you like made these connections at Woodward.
Yeah.
And then didn't you guys go on some like wild, didn't you guys go out to like California or something?
Yeah, so the Egg,
The Egg.
The Egg, TJ okay. Porfelli, I believe is his real name.
Okay.
And Chad Santoni, I think, is his last name. We all became friends with Bar Spinner Ryan, which then led to Sean Butler. And through him filming and stuff like that, so Bar Spinner would communicate with The Egg a lot, invited us to come out to California. So we couldn't legally buy our own plane tickets and stuff. And his parents were, you know, Egg's parents were pretty busy working and running businesses. And so my mom and dad said, hey, we'll take a vacation. And they went, I think, to Disney World or some shit like that. And they bought us our plane tickets. And we flew to Southern California. My parents rented a car. And they gave us locations. So we, at that time, we didn't have phones. We had to, you know, look at a map and figure out how to get
right
to the trails. And then once we got there, then they took us around, and I think we spent like 3 or 4 days there. And we rode the other one, was it Bose you were saying? Or the ones that dipped down?
Bose, yeah.
Bose trails, yeah.
What is it, pretty impressive magazine, Tread, I think it was. That
which Tread, Chuck, yeah. Tread, yeah.
Was on the cover doing
the one-handed tabletop. Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Man, you got to ride all these places I wanted to ride so bad. And again, we're similar in age. I would have loved to have been experiencing that type of thing at that age. Because like, that stuff just looks so special.
I still remember. I mean, those are the kind of memories that I was very blessed and fortunate to have parents that were so cool. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, wanted to see kids have a good time. And they didn't care, you know, what we did as long as we were, I mean, I had a smile on ear to ear.
Yeah.
Months, weeks.
Well, that's one question I tend to ask on these interviews is like, your parent, like, obviously you said your parents were into it. Like, whereas, I mean, for our parents' generations, like, it's so obscure. Like, riding a little BMX bicycle is so obscure that it's like, I think it's like something special when your parents, like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll support you in this. If you're into it, we're into it too.
Yeah. They were that way all the time with me. Whatever I, you know, if I wanted to play basketball, they'd come to the games. If I wanted to play baseball, they'd come. If I wanted to play golf, I mean, it's hard to walk around a golf course.
Falling around the course.
They would take me. I mean, so that's one of the things that I always am very thankful for is that my parents were very supportive in anything I ever did. And
you know. Oh, that's rad. Now, going to Sheep Hills from a scene like from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
What was totally different. Yeah.
What was your take on it? I'm like, why do you gotta pedal so much?
That was in my notes too for you, and I don't
wanna talk shit. It was like you were at the BMX track, and you'd have to sprint the whole way to that second straight to get any enjoyment. Where like Western PA, you would take three pedals coast and.
Well, I know when I first went to Sheep Hills, I mean the expectation was so high. And again, I'm not trying to knock anyone's stuff,
right.
But I think it's just a matter of, you know, when we're that age, living here, not realizing kind of how good we have it.
Right.
Because when I first went to Sheep Hills, it was just kind of like, you know, like. Okay, this is, you know, you kind of put it up on this pedestal, but having been from Western Pennsylvania, you don't realize that your stuff's probably better than most stuff anywhere, you know, and I don't want to bring like a negative vibe to the Sheep Hills story, but it was a little bit of a disappointment, honestly, when I went to Sheep Hills for the first time, you know.
Right, and that doesn't change the fact that Sheep Hills is iconic.
It's like, awesome, it's iconic, it's legendary. Yeah, I'm just saying that was, you know, that was kind of a takeaway, just. Not to say that that was bad, that's just more of a testament to how good we had it here,
absolutely.
I guess, is what I'm getting at, you know what I mean?
When I went to Sheep Hills, I'd never been to Pennsylvania trails yet, but I went to Sheep Hills, and I'm like, coming from North Carolina, I was like, wow, this is it?
Yeah.
Like, and you mentioned the pedaling, it wasn't like a smooth pedal either, it was like, like you're just like, over the
like
whoops.
Washboard,
exactly.
I mean, they didn't have, in their defense, it was like sand. They didn't have the type of dirt we did to work with.
Like,
you know,
what can you do?
Right.
What can you do? But yeah, speaking of trail spots.
But I don't, not to, I hate to interrupt, but even the way they sculpted the jumps, like that was pretty crucial to me because as somebody that built trails and you try to ride them, they were like worn out.
Yeah.
Nothing, and obviously nothing against it. It's an iconic spot.
Yeah.
But it was nowhere near
Well, again,
maintain.
Just,
I mean,
they don't have that clay that holds together and you
so
can shape it.
So that was something that absolutely. I noticed. And on that trip, Chad broke his elbow. So the last day we spent in the hospital and
oh, shit.
Had to get cleared to come home.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty wild.
Yeah, to experience that though at a young age, like that's pretty cool. Like that's
what, 14, did you say you were, or 15?
I'm digging in way the, back. Sure. I would say 14, 15-ish.
Okay. Now, since we're on the subject of trails, you had your own trail spot. What were the Empire Trails? Was that your spot?
So that led to a lot of, you know, I guess, people saying stuff and whatnot, because when the magazine stuff came out, they said George's East Coast Empire Trails. That pissed a lot of people off.
Right.
I never referred to them as my trails.
Sure.
It was just, you know, people that were never around, and I never claimed that they were, but everybody assumed that they were. So when that went into print, I got a lot of shit for that.
Okay.
So they were never my trails.
Okay.
I dug a lot.
I was gonna say you were a local there.
Yeah, I came into there with Chad and Joe Berger and that the Egg and Dave Bartek, Mike Shear, Steve Shear, Steve Mullet. I mean, Craig, Scott Slagle, Levon. I mean, there were a bunch of dudes. And if I missed anybody, I'm sorry. But just the amount of, you know, earth that we moved over the years there, and to see kids pulling refrigerators out of garbage places and dragging them. I mean, six kids pulling. I mean, it was my dad later on, probably 17 years old, came down there and he's like, and he knows what it, you know, mounds of dirt look like from construction. And he's like, you shoveled with your friends all this.
Yeah, I think it's that fact is kind of missed on like the general public. And I think we almost end up taking it for granted how much, I mean, the other day I was at Hazelwood, just like, God, this is all shoveled. Like, this would be mind blowing. We just kind of like, oh yeah, these are the local trails here. But like, you know, you take a common person into there, like, you guys built this with shovels? Like, it's phenomenal how much work trails actually take to build. But I think when you're in the groove and you love to do it so much, it just kind of happens, you know. You don't even realize it's how much work it is.
Right.
You know? You don't even really consider it work, I don't think.
No, it was not.
Well, didn't you say that was one of your favorite things, was like building and,
hands
and creating
down. Hands down.
Jumps?
Yeah, hands down. At the time, I think we had those CD Walkmans that you put a CD in and you couldn't put it in your pocket, so you had to like find a way to tape it or do something to listen to it while you were digging, because sometimes you'd be there by yourself, you know, raining. You'd have an extra pair of shoes. You wouldn't. Or sometimes just walking your bare feet, and didn't have chainsaws. You had an axe or a pick.
Yeah.
But it was some of the best times of my life. I still, like that day that I got to go to Hazelwood, you were kind enough and you had to miss it. But that to me was just iconic. The way that stuff is manicured and the berms, that's a testament to those dudes, because I know how long that takes.
Right.
That is man hours beyond man hours, and that is a true just love for what...
100%, yeah.
You know,
no paycheck involved.
Like, it was cool to just even be able to be down there and see you guys shred that place.
If you follow Mark Potosny, who's like the main guy at Hazelwood, if you follow him on Instagram or any social media... Like, it'll be the coldest day of the year, snow everywhere, and, like, it's like him at Hazelwood moving trees, and, like, you're like, wow, he's outside, like, working on the trails right now. It's the middle of January, and he's, like, it's a really, like, your heart has to be into it, and you can tell with those guys it definitely is, which I think anyone that builds trails, like, your heart has to be into it to make something that's good for others to enjoy.
There's no doubt the skills are tipped. You dig more than you ride. Like, there's no question right. about it. You know what I mean? I mean.
But I thought Empire, I think maybe towards the end, or when did Empire get plowed? What year would that have been?
About 2000, 2001.
Oh, wow, okay.
But I do want to say something. I keep interrupting, but special thanks to Mark Potosny, is it how you say it?
Yeah.
For being so welcoming to me, because, you know, I didn't think, just from back in the day, whenever I went places, you couldn't really talk. And this dude's coming up. He hasn't seen me in 20 some years. Very warm, you know, conversation. That totally is opposite from whenever the mid 90s.
I think we've all grown up a bit. You know what I mean? That was a lot of like childhood, kind of juvenile
it was really cool.
Machoism almost.
Yeah, it was really cool. Machismo. So thank you, Mark.
You got out of the trail scene right like at the peak of trail Nazism. So you yes. probably remember like yes. how gnarly things were. Like right. you don't just show up at someone else's
no.
spot.
Right.
Like, you ask. Yeah. You ask.
That's why I was, if you remember me, I was texting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When we would talk on the phone or we would text, I'm like, why is George making such a big deal about this? Yeah, just come out
just
anytime.
Come to the trails,
and you're
yeah.
like, hey, you sure it's cool? Is right. everyone gonna be on board with everything? I'm like, dude, just come out. Like, yeah. no one cares. But I realized, like, that's what you left. Like, when yeah. you stopped riding, like, that's the world that you left. It's not like that anymore. We're, you know, all pushing 40 years old now. Like, people have jobs and families.
Right.
It's
more
like,
important things to worry about than like, banning people from their little piece of woods.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right. So I know for a fact Mark was pretty hyped that you came out there because when I was texting him about it, he's like, oh, yeah, Hate Clothing. Because George had a company called Hate Clothing.
I forgot about that until just now.
That's so bad.
Yeah, you're a kid, though.
Teenage
yeah.
angst,
you make a black shirt with hate written on it.
And like, it was like Anthem writing.
Yeah, so, I remember. Yeah.
If I could take that back, I could, because that's not definitely the vibe you want to put out now
sure.
or any time in your life. But
again, we were young. That you were probably 17, 18 years old when I saw you wearing a Hate shirt.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty badass.
And he was like the quietest, nicest dude.
I know. One time Bennett came to my house when I lived in North Carolina. And I'm wearing a shirt with a skull on it.
All right.
And he goes, whoa, Chris, moved out of your parents' house wearing a shirt with a skull on it. All right.
Stepping it up.
Good, yeah, it's super badass, you know? Yeah,
right. Chris was getting an edge to him.
I wasn't hardcore enough to be rocking a Hate shirt, but
you didn't.
You were close with the skull. You were on your way.
So Empire got plowed in like around 2001, you say?
Yeah, I believe that's when it was right after all the publicity that you know a little bit of that it got, and then when that was going on, people started coming there without us being there, and the neighborhood got upset, and then you know they came down and they saw what was there, and they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna have to plow this place," and I'm like, "Okay." So it was like probably 8 months after the initial. Deal. So I would say mid 2000, 2001.
Okay.
So that's an example of where some coverage actually ultimately got the trails plowed.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and it was
100%.
And then at that point, it's the closest set of trails to the track. So a lot of people from the track would come ride your trails. So I'm sure that parking lot was getting pretty hectic there for a while, especially with the local residents.
And it was a physical therapy place that the parking lot was.
Oh, why
so they knew there weren't 40 people there.
Right.
I always thought it was an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. No? Okay.
The apartments were up on the other side where Chad grew up. And then the homes from where the pond was, they were pretty expensive homes.
Yeah.
And that's where a few of the kids lived. But they wanted to expand that larger home market into there.
Okay. You mentioned the coverage that Empire was getting, Fox Video.
I think both of them.
Both Fox videos, huge videos. Domination. I know, didn't Punjab have some clips from...
Standard Country.
Was it Standard Country?
Or one of them.
I thought it was Domination.
Maybe.
Where he wrote to the Led Zeppelin song.
Yes.
One of my favorite parts of all time. But I remember watching, I was like, oh, I think that's Empire. Because I'd been to Empire a few times myself. And I remember coming there that day that the whole snap... crew came through.
Yeah, we got that coverage though by default because they wanted to go to Push, but it was too wet.
Was Push even there at that point?
Or Glassport.
Death Valley, yeah.
I can't remember what happened, but somebody called me and was like, hey, you know, we got a bunch of people in town. Are you going to be around? And at the time I was in school and I left school early and, pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I remember I'd been there a few times, as you know.
Always fun to see you.
Dude, likewise. And I remember you got that, was it a 2-page spread in Snap? 1-footed X up. And then like you and some of the other locals got some coverage in Snap as well. And
yes.
This is when like magazines were paramount.
That was it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't
That's
have social media or anything. So like I remember opening it up, I'm like, look at George getting the 2-page spread.
But they covered my shirt up.
Does the hate shirt?
No.
Was it a hate shirt?
It was Fuck It, Cam 3.
Oh, good.
Pennsylvania. and they didn't want Fuck It in the magazine.
Was that when they propped the shovel up?
Right.
Okay, I got you now.
Snap was pretty tightly.
Yeah, they were going to make me put tape on my shirt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
But.
Oh, it all makes sense now.
Is that when they called it George's Trails and
that all kind of happened? Yes, that was the issue. And all that stuff, you know, everybody else that was there got pretty salty and...
That's kind of the same old story, right? Like,
you know,
the guy who takes the magazine there just gets done. I think you dealt with that at 22
a little bit.
You know, like, Chris's Trails. Yeah. It's like, ooh, Chris's Trails. Like, you don't even dig here, motherfucker. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
I didn't write the article, you know? Right.
I was always happy for people that, you know, that's just my general.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think you knew that. I'll see if I can find it, but I got a signature helmet from ProTec, and in the ProTec came a little, like, looked like a trading card. And I'm doing a turndown, and it's from Empire Trails, and it's just got like all my like stats on it.
That's
or something.
Awesome.
6'3", 180 pounds. Like, but I every time I look at them, I'm like, oh, Empire was sick.
Thank you.
Of course. No, thank you.
That means a lot coming from you.
Because I had clips and videos there. I had a couple different photos. Actually, this probably within like a couple minutes of each other, that one-footed X up spread that you got, I got a no-footed can-can photo. Same angle, same jump. It was probably like only one or two pictures later, you know?
Which was cool, because that's like the first time that I ever had any, you know, real photography going down.
Well,
you
know? Who was shooting that, Steve?
It was Mulligan.
Mulligan?
Yeah.
And there were some pretty, you know, heavy hitters
Mikey
there.
Mikey Aiken, right. Magilla, like... Yeah, the
Stoffer.
Yeah, that was a heavy trip.
Morales. Fuzzy.
Morales, Fuzzy.
Jesus.
Corey.
Dude, it was gnarly.
Stasio.
Was Nasty on that?
Yeah.
Jeez. I just remember Aiken on that trip, because that was like, he had just gotten on Mosh. He was probably only 16 years old. And everyone's like, this dude's going to be something. It was like, he got the most coverage. He got the most photos, video clips, everything on that entire trip. And he just rode super hard every day because he's 16. But I just remember him riding your spot, and then we rode like Area 51.
Which I went there with you guys too.
Yeah.
Which that was a great spot.
Yeah, fun.
That's fun. Technically still there.
Is it there? Is it?
From what I understand, yeah.
Somebody call Blake.
Yeah. Get See, Blake on the horn.
Get him running.
Now, you were a good bike rider.
I was. Right.
I know. I know you're modest as well.
Yeah, I was.
Good style.
Thank you very much.
Personality. Well, I mean, people can be good bike riders, but they can be cocksuckers. But you were like always fun to be around.
Thank you.
You really seemed like you had the ingredients to be a dude that was gonna be around for a long time. Not only in BMX, but in the trail world in general. Damn it. Go.
Take off.
Pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Gotta do
of all things to be interrupted
right.
by. A
Come
plane
on,
taking off. It's pretty cool.
Nothing to see here.
I think they just landed.
They did.
Because it landed and I was like, wow, that's pretty quiet.
Oh, really? I didn't even hear them land.
That was good. Sorry, folks.
That's good. Plane landing.
Yeah, whatever. Another day.
Yeah.
Let me know when I'm good to go again.
As soon as he kind of gets around the corner here. You're good.
So, you were a good bike rider. Good style.
Being very kind.
Good personality as well. I mean, people can be good, but if they're cocksuckers, you don't want to be around them. So you're always fun to be around.
Thank you.
You did a lot of shovel work. You really seem like the type of guy that was gonna be around not only in BMX for a long time, but in the trail world for a long time. And at what point did you start transitioning into the world of aviation?
So it would have been when I graduated from high school, my parents.
So you were still riding BMX while starting, okay.
Yeah, I was 17 when I graduated from high school. And my parents were pretty staunch on me going to college and, you know, that typical get a job, get education and all that. And
enter the real world.
Right. Yeah. And I really wasn't into that, not taking away from it. but everybody has their way of, you know, going through life. So I had scholarships to go to Waynesburg University, and I really wasn't looking forward to it. I wasn't pumped. And I got an opportunity from a family member to be a pilot certificate up at West Mifflin, Allegheny County Airport. And I had been driving for like 6 or 8 months at the time. So I jumped on that opportunity and I went up to the airport and I met the kid. I was probably 19 or 20 years old. And he's like, all right, you know, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go out, walk around the airplane and get in the plane. And he's like, all right, turn the key, start it up.
The plane has keys?
Yeah, these small little airplanes, okay. Yeah.
All right.
So get in and start the thing up. He's sitting over there and got the little headset on and he does all the talking. He says, all right, here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna steer with your feet. Here's the power lever. You're gonna push this in. I'm like, man.
Crash course.
This is cool.
Yeah.
So we taxi down and that's like driving the airplane down the, get down to the end. And he's like, all right, man. So when we get out there, you're going to push the power up. When I tell you to pull back, you're going to pull back. When I tell you to stop, stop. Now I'm like mind blown at this. I'm like, am I actually going to fly? Get on the runway. And sure as you know what, going down the runway, he's like, all right, pull back, stop. And obviously, I think he had his hand underneath.
Okay.
But the feeling that he was giving me was just like me riding a bike for the first time. So I would say that day, I was like, man, this is cool.
Was there any kind of like, was there classroom instruction that you had to do?
Well, at this time, I didn't, when I, that day, I didn't know that I was going to do that.
So was that just like an, that was an opportunity for one experience?
Correct.
Like that wasn't, was, just,
oh, wow.
That wasn't even intended to lead
like
into
today,
anything.
Right. You guys could do that same thing.
Absolutely. I gotcha.
So I did that. And then whenever I get back from this, I'm like, well, you know, can I do something? Like, and then so this kid goes on and says, yeah, you know, we have this course through CCAC, Community College. You can take the classes and you can get all your ratings to be a professional pilot. So I go home and I have to try and convince my parents that I don't want to go to school, get a good job. And
you're in high school at the time?
No,
or I just graduated.
Just graduated. And I had all these scholarships. So my parents were, once again, super cool. And they say, all right, well, as long as you can go to the dean, convince him to give you your scholarship money back, good to go. And I'm like, how am I going to get this dude to give me this? And so I, you know, thought about it and went down there and asked the guy. I was like, hey, you know, I'm George Polichek, and I'm supposed to be starting this fall semester in the, I think it was like business or something like that. And I went on this flight, and I want to be a professional pilot. And he, like, looks at me, and he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And it's like awkward silence, and he's like, you know, I always wanted to be a pilot. He's like, but my wife never let me. He said, so if you had, you know, the knowledge and the whereabout to come and, you know, basically talk to me and ask me for your money back, he says, whatever we got to do, we'll make it work. So I was like, oh, wow. So after that, it was still BMX, but I had to, you know, still put forth classroom. And so I signed up, enrolled in the Community College of Allegheny County pilot program, and I'd go to school, you know, certain nights and dig trails, ride, and didn't have to go all the time. So I would get to go places and do different things and leave the BMX life, but
While working towards something else.
Right.
You mentioned you went to like Austin with Punjab, is
yes.
that right?
Yes. So that would have been like senior year. I would skip school and he was a lot older than me and we would go down and we'd ride 9th Street, I think it was, and I want to say we stayed with a Ryan Corrigan.
Ryan Corrigan, yeah.
And the, trying to think who else, but to get to ride 9th Street was pretty
another iconic spot. Yeah,
I mean, you'd see a lot of it. And I mean, big name guys that are, I think, still riding today were pretty young that mm-hmm. I would see there.
Yeah, that was like the winter.
Chase Hawk.
Everybody'd go there in the winter. Yeah, yeah. Well, Chase was from there, but yeah, a lot of guys in the winter would actually, that's where everybody would migrate to. At some point, Austin became the place to go.
Now, so as you're working, well, you going back to Texas, didn't you say you were like, there was like a German magazine? There's a guy shooting.
I don't remember the name of it, but
it's probably Morales. Freedom?
Yeah. But Morales, I forget where we were at somewhere. He's like, yeah, I saw you in a magazine. And I'm like, really? Cool. And then somebody else said, I mean, then people were saying it, but I've never been able to see it or get my hands on it. So I don't know.
I'm friends with Kay Klauberg. He ran Freedom.
Okay.
And I could see if I could dig it up, because that'd be interesting.
They told me I had a Camp 3 sweatshirt on.
Okay.
I think.
Huh.
But I can't remember. But that was still pretty cool.
Oh.
Is this a takeoff or a landing?
That's a takeoff.
Takeoff.
Can you tell by the sound?
No. Sorry.
So as you're like working towards getting your pilot's license, I mean, it's based on hours, right? You have to like put in hours in the cockpit of a plane.
Correct. So certain hours you get to do certain things. So at a set point, you would be able to be in an airplane by yourself in around what they call the traffic pattern, which is like a, you know, little figure eight kind of thing around the airport. And after that, then you have these cross countries. So after you solo, they see that you can land and take off safely, then you'd have to go in a cross country to show them that you can navigate from an airport to another airport. So in that point, I was still rotting, and I had been out east to Posh, and I believe it was Nam at the time.
At that time, yeah.
So I had to do these long solo cross countries. I would take my bike apart, and I would put it in the back of a small little plane that just took off.
Mm-hmm.
And I would navigate out there, and Dave King would pick me up from the airport. And then I would ride the trails, and then I would take my bike apart, he would take me back, and I would fly home.
Freaking dream right there.
That's amazing.
I drive by, because now there's Caddy. Like, there's no more Nam, but
I've never
Caddy.
Been there.
Nam and Caddy are both right, like, the vicinity of the airport, like, right there, too.
Caddy is... You could throw a rock.
I was going to say, you could ride your bike literally out from the airport.
I actually think that the land that Caddy's built on is property of the airport. And when they were like getting all the legalities figured out, yeah. I think they had to go through the people at the airport.
Wow.
So every time when you drive to Caddy, you drive right by Lehigh Valley Airport. And I always think to myself, like, how badass would it be to, like, be able to fly here, ride Caddy for the day, and then just fly home.
Day tripping.
Yeah. And George has done it. Like, he told me that story the other day. I'm like, that lucky bastard. Like,
that's awesome.
Because I always think that. I'm like, man, that'd be so cool to do. And I was like, I was so happy that you did it. Because, like...
Because that's a far drive. I mean, we would...
It's a five-hour drive. Yeah.
How long would it take you to fly that?
Probably... 2 hours?
2 hours,
15?
Yeah.
In the smaller
plane. Small, I was going to say, you're a smaller plane. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's slow.
Still, though, compared to, you know.
But it was pretty scary. I mean, you barely able to drive there and navigate. Now you're in an airplane.
Right.
By yourself.
So when you were doing that, how old were you? Were you legit, like, literally by yourself?
Yeah.
Like, the only human being on the plane? No shit.
Because you weren't allowed to have people in there with you at that point, right?
No.
Those were the hours that you had.
Yeah, you had to, which I still don't get why they want you to be by yourself.
Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't at least have a guy like watching over you or something.
Yeah, like now, I mean, that's what you do. You always fly with two people because four eyes are better than one, four mm-hmm. ears, and way safe.
But yeah.
I still never really understood that.
Is that still the procedure, though,
for
young pilots coming out? You have to do little alone time. That's crazy. That'd be scary, man.
That's a lot of time by yourself.
Especially when, like, I mean, now I assume you'd be scared to fly, but not scared, but it's, you know, there's no one else to lean on. But
it's definitely
not
safe.
When you're first starting out, you know, it seems just odd that they would, that would be the way they would do it.
For sure.
So you get your hours in, you get the classroom instruction, of course, done.
Yeah.
At what point did you start working in aviation? Actually, so this is like where we start transitioning here. At what point were you like, okay, I'm not riding BMX anymore. I'm just focusing on my career in aviation.
I would say it was when I busted my teeth out on a handrail.
Okay.
In Pittsburgh. Because I couldn't have my teeth in for a while. So now I'm going to learn how, you know, I'm almost done flying and I'm walking in with like a handrail chiseled my teeth off. So I got to smile and I got to be, unfortunately, you know, dressed the part, look the part.
Yeah, sure.
So I thought about it. I'm like, you know, am I going to be able to sustain a life digging trails or riding bike? I wasn't that good, you know, to where I could go to contests, make any money or, you know. So I just thought to myself, look, I'm going to go at aviation 100%, give it everything, you know, the same way I did BMX. And I would say like 01 is when that happened.
Okay.
That's cool to hear though, because I hear so many stories of guys who, like, when they're done with BMX, it's kind of like they settle for whatever's next. Whereas I'm kind of stealing this from you because I heard you say it earlier, but you kind of replaced one passion with the other. You know what I mean? I feel like so many people, once BMX is over, it's like, all right, now it's time to settle for a normal life.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool how you did.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
Especially coming from you.
No, absolutely. You like moved into something that you, it like, you know, placeholder, like BMX left, aviation came in. I think that's such a cool thing.
Well, you
know?
Kind of said that too in the podcast that we did. Be sure to go check out the Chris Bennett Polliver interview.
Definitely.
Episode 1.
Yeah. You kind of said that as well. Like,
as well. Well, I had a gap though, you know, it's awesome how he just kind of just seamlessly found one immediately, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's great. That's just so cool. Thank you.
So you knock your teeth out.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, well, I can't keep up this kind of dangerous profession. You didn't see a future in BMX. No. Even though I think, and I know I've said this before, like you kind of got out of it at a time when there was a lot, like there were more opportunities coming in for dudes, like not necessarily making a living, but there were dudes that were getting like flown places and getting sent places to like maybe build a course or like, or go on a trail trip or something like that. Like that was starting to happen around that time that you got out. That's why I was kind of surprised. I was like, well, he kind of got out like at the wrong moment, but it kind of turns out it's the right moment now that we sit here 20 years later.
Kind of worked out. Yeah.
You just never know. But, you know, I took a gamble, I think, because it was something that I was very passionate about. I had a lot of friends. I met a lot of friends. I was traveling and it was definitely kind of a odd time for a long time. I'd say at least a year. I was like, man, I really miss BMX.
Sure.
I really miss all the friends and the people and the, you know, shit talking like you guys were saying. And but there comes a time, I guess, where things happen for a reason. And I had to make a decision whether I was going to move to Florida and finish up the last rating where I was going to stay here and try and figure it out. So I just figured I'd try Florida out, go there. It's a professional like academy where you go and they kind of train you like an airline or a professional pilot. So I did that and I spent about 8 months there, got everything finished, came back here, and then I got my first job. And I still had my bike. I was still dabbling a little bit in it, but the guy that gave me my first job, he's like, look, man, you know, we have this aeromedical stuff and we have these, you know, contracts, and either you're going to be our guy or you're not. So I don't want you doing crazy activities like you do, because I'm putting money into you.
Sure.
I need to be able to get it out. So I had to quit BMX.
And what were those first jobs that you were doing in aviation?
So it was like aeromedical stuff where you would fly organs and hearts and doctors and stuff. Somebody was in an accident and then somebody needed something. I think it's called Corps. They would pay for the plane and pay for the pilots and stuff like that. So all hours of the night, you'd be going to all over the place, Chicago, Indianapolis, wherever the accident happened.
And oh, wow. So you would get like calls in the middle of the night, like we need.
Oh, yeah.
Or flying Dr.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Right. He wants to get a heart.
Yeah.
And then you would sit in this like little FBO gas station kind of thing for planes, and you would wait and they'd call you and you'd come home.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. were there like other jobs outside of that?
So I would, you know, when I wasn't flying at the time, I would clean the hangar floor. I'd fuel airplanes. Just, you know, you were young. And at that time, it was hard to get a job because September 11th happened. Mm. So a lot of the airlines were furloughing and jobs were scarce. So to be 21 years old, flying, getting paid, it was, you know, I was very blessed and fortunate and thankful that somebody gave me an opportunity to get in and get my feet wet, per se.
Now, how do you progress from there? How do you, like, is it just based on time or is it more classroom instruction where you can go from, like, you know, flying like single engine aircraft to like being able to fly at night and fly at different elevations and then eventually flying jets?
Yeah, so your initial training gives you all those qualifications. Like that's what we were doing at CCAC. That's what we were doing in Florida. We were building time. We were getting these sign-offs to do the instruments. We were getting a high altitude sign-off and stuff. And then once you get out of that realm, you can go to build your time by flight instructing. So when I was in Florida, I got my flight instructor rating, and I thought that that's what the way I was gonna have to build time. But, you know, to my point, what I was saying, I came back and there was an opportunity. I started cleaning the floors, fueling planes, and the guy gave me a shot.
Yeah.
So that kept me from flight instructing, which flight instructing's, you know, pretty scary, mm-hmm. knowing that I was that way one time.
Sure, and, yeah.
You know, to
taking the student drivers of the world.
Correct.
In an airplane.
Yeah. Small airplanes, too.
A lot can go wrong.
Yeah.
Quick.
So you're saying you had the qualifications.
Correct.
It wasn't, at the beginning, it's not like there were guys, the guys getting the jobs weren't necessarily more qualified, they were just more experienced.
Correct.
You know, you were clear to do everything they could do.
Right.
But you were just not as kind of far along in your...
And so these bigger planes like this, you have the rating already.
Right.
You just have to go to school. So you'll do, like, say, 7 days of ground school and classroom work, and then you'll do 7 days in a full motion flight simulator where they fail tires, they give you bad weather, they catch fire, windshields blow out, smoke in the cockpit. I mean, it's pretty gnarly stuff. Yeah.
Those simulators are, like, you know, billion-dollar video games,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely.
What's the hardest part about flying? We kind of touched on this a little bit.
So I would say the hardest part is just coordinating people's schedules and weather. You know, I talked about weather being a hard part, but I would say more I think about it, scheduling people and time.
So it's not like a technically difficult. Like,
no.
It's just like kind of understanding what it is. Like, because when we got up in the cockpit, I'm looking at everything. Like, I don't know what any of this stuff does.
I still sometimes do that.
And I'm looking at the
I'm glad you told us that after we went on the plane,
right?
I'm looking at the yoke. I'm like, okay, I understand. That's what they use to steer this thing.
Yeah, but what's all this other shit?
But there's like, you're like sitting there, you're pressing buttons and this button and this button. And there's a little keyboard down here and you're typing on that. And I'm just like, this seems crazy. But yeah. I guess like if you put in the time to learn it.
Oh yeah, it's like anything. It's like your iPhone. If you push on it enough, it'll
stuff happens.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I wonder. Yeah, like you said, I mean, we're landing. I see, you know, like Mark reach over, like, ooh, what did that do?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what was that switch? You know what I mean? I always think of that when I see you guys. Like,
and that's the other thing, having somebody like Mark that's good at what they do. You know, that
sure,
guy
yeah.
has a lot of experience, flown a lot of really cool people, and done a lot of really cool stuff. So to get to work with him side by side, it gives the family that you're flying a safe sense of security that they have two really good qualified safety oriented people up front taking care of them. So
yeah, that's a huge,
I would say, you know, weather is another big thing where you got to make decisions mm-hmm. regarding their safety and their well-being. So and as well as the scheduling of their time, you got to be conscientious and make sure that you're giving them the proper information.
And safety is the name of the game.
Absolutely.
As a pilot. Okay.
Right. We're risk managers. Risk, you know, assess the risk of the situation.
Now, as a corporate pilot, this is kind of like a two-part question. What's your work schedule like, and how many planes do you actually own? I guess another question would be like, or not own, how many planes do you actually fly? You don't own any of the planes.
No.
Okay, so you're a pilot service.
Correct.
Okay.
So I was 21 or 22, and a very wealthy gentleman comes up. It's his first day in his new plane, and I'm in the left seat, and other guy's in the right seat, and he puts his hands on us both, and he goes, if it flies, fucks, or floats, rent it. And I will remember that for the rest of my life. So excuse me if that language is all right, but that when you asked if I own, I will never own my own airplane. I will always rent it.
Yeah, Bennett, you own a boat, right?
I do. Should I have rented it? Sounds like it.
People always told me, like, it's much better just to have a friend with a boat than have
that. I can understand. Yes, absolutely.
What did they say boat stands for? Bust out another
bail
thousand.
Bail out another thousand.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fun. Can you please, and you told me some of this the other day, can you please talk about a little side job that you did, or a couple side jobs you probably did, as
yes.
Airplane repo?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the show on TV at all.
Is it spot on?
No.
No, they juice it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely made for TV.
Okay.
I was flying with this older gentleman that I still fly with today, and he was kind of a mentor. And I go out west, we're in California in a plane, and he gets a phone call, and he's like, hey, you want to go to Vegas tonight? I'm like, 21. I'm like, okay, what are we doing? He's like, I'll tell you when we get there. So we get on an airliner, we land at Las Vegas International Airport, some guy comes in a van, picks us up, and they're talking up front. I'm in the back, and I think I had a BlackBerry at the time or something, so I'm trying to figure out how to text the thing. And we get to the airport. I'm like, what is going on here? So he says, go to the bathroom, come out, and be ready to go outside. I'm like, okay, this is weird. So I see, come out of the bathroom, I see these two pilots walking in with all their passengers, and next thing you know, we're walking out on a ramp. He's like, run. So we run. We get in the plane, and he's like, start the engines. So he closes the door. I'm starting the engines. He's making sure everything's in the back. Now, all of the pilot's stuff is still in the plane. So.
And I mean, the pilot probably doesn't own the plane, right?
Definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
The owners were walking in, but evidently they were served papers. And this goes on for a long time. Like, somebody's just not going to come.
Yeah, it doesn't happen 2 days late on your payment.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, this is years.
Right.
Or at least a year. So we get in, we start it up, call for clearance, taxi. We're taxiing. Next thing you know, the pilots start running out. And these little chalk things that are holding the wheels so that it doesn't roll, they are picking these up. And I can remember it. These dudes are running, and they're throwing them at those back tires.
Trying to jam them up.
Running over them. And we get out to the end of the runway, take off, and fly. So that was probably one of the gnarlier things that, you know.
Imagine chasing a plane down the runway.
That's like a movie.
Come on, yeah.
You got the luggage or the cart, the stair cart, you know, the guy jumps off of it.
But then here's me. I'm like, you know.
You didn't know this was going to go on an hour earlier.
And then I'm thinking back to it, and I'm like, man, I just totally fucked over people that, you know, it could have been me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, man, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to answer the question, that was pretty wild.
I thought that was hilarious. I was thinking about that after we hung out. Like, I was thinking on my drive home, like.
That's wild.
That's one of the things, like that and like the flying across Pennsylvania to ride now. I was like, George would be perfect for a podcast. Like. I love it.
I couldn't be more honored to be sitting at the same table with you two. So.
You know?
Thank you.
Feelings mutual, my friend.
Absolutely.
What is worldwide aviation?
So, worldwide is a company that...
Your company?
My own company, yes. It was named by my wife, Mindy, who I love dearly, and...
Also, shout out to Mindy for giving you a free day to to do this with us.
Hang out at the airport.
Thank you.
So when I was doing all the stuff, I would be putting my expenses, like if I wasn't working for the company, I would go and do extracurricular activities where I would, you know, move planes, consult with people and stuff. So the IRS and the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue decided that they were going to disallow some of my expenses. So I had to, you know, create this company. So, I mean, it really evolved into, you know, an attorney, an accountant, and all this stuff, but I needed a name. So I'm a huge Will Ferrell fan, and my wife is a huge Will Ferrell fan, and so I always ask her opinion, because she comes up with some pretty cool shit. So she's like, worldwide. If you recall,
yeah.
Stepbrothers.
Are you guys going to invest or not? Yeah.
So that worldwide then spawned into Prestige Real Estate and Development, which she named, which Prestige Worldwide. So thank you, Will Ferrell.
And your wife, of
and
course.
Mindy, yeah. And Mindy. Because, yeah, it's fun.
I love like how professional being a corporate pilot seems,
right?
And how like even like real estate investing and stuff like that. It's like, but it all comes down to like this movie that you saw, Step Brothers, where it's like, oh, you're still like a silly kid.
I am. And the t-shirts, you did too. The where's my fucking jet?
Right.
Well, I'm not familiar with that. What was that?
he had. I don't know if you wanted me to mention this or not. And I'm sorry.
Please
if you didn't.
Do.
Please He asked me like who makes your shirts and stuff, and I was like, yeah, Bert and those guys over at Ink Division.
Thank you, Bert.
Yep.
Thank
thanks, Bert. Division. Jason. The guys that did all the Swear One stuff. And he had these shirts made for his company. And you had referenced another shirt, right? That said, "Where's my fucking yacht?" or something.
Yes.
And he's like, I want it just like this, but I want it to say, where's my fucking jet? So I was like, all right, done. Like, I got a hold of Bert, and I'm like, we need some where's my fucking jet shirts. But to your point, you know, just like such a serious business, but kind of the way I think we all do things.
Yeah.
I
mean,
that's probably the BMX.
We grew up with BMXers.
Yeah, definitely. Like
the BMX
kind. Doing it a little differently, you know?
Now you mentioned your wife, Mindy.
Yes.
Do you guys have any kids?
I have a stepson, Jake, who is 15 and a half.
Okay.
And he was an aspiring Sidney Crosby hockey player, but now he is a football player.
Oh, okay.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. Does he have any interest in, like, I hate saying action sports.
He rides dirt bikes with his dad.
Okay.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. All right.
That was the last time I was at the BMX track. I took him to South Park.
Because you mentioned about bringing him out to Hazelwood as well.
Right.
That's why that day I was thinking.
He had a football thing, so he didn't get to come.
Oh, okay. Well,
but we're definitely going to come back.
Yeah, bring him out sometime. He'd probably love it.
Absolutely.
I mean, grown men.
How could you not?
Yeah. Flying through the air on bicycles.
Which is really cool.
Well, here's kind of like my final question, and we can get into this as much as you'd like, but is there anything that you learned as a BMXer that you've been able to carry over into your current career as a corporate pilot? Or just in life in general?
Yeah, I would think BMX taught me to see from a different set of eyes and to just enjoy the moment, and to, when you're in the woods or you're digging or you're being with people, to be in the moment and not to, you know, take for granted what you're able to see and what you're able to do. So that's kind of the way I treat my job, is I love what I do. And every place I go, I try and make the most out of it and to see as much as I can and to, you know, meet as many different people and, you know, just kind of spread the good deeds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it seems like even the decision to fly was almost influenced by your BMX background, right? Like you said.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, instead of like the, you know, you didn't do the football, basketball, baseball thing, just as you didn't do the college. You know, you kind of went into BMX instead of that stuff.
Right.
And then instead of going into the college, you're like, no, I think I would really love to get into aviation. I'm going to do that. Just like you did with BMX.
Correct.
You kind of followed the path. You followed the passion as opposed to this kind of the normal
100%.
Route. Yeah.
That's fantastic, man.
Thank you. It's kind of like the way you guys operate.
You know? Well, I think the BMX sticks with...
You love what you do.
Absolutely. No, I mean,
you
that's
love what... You do.
This is what I do. So, yeah. So
you wouldn't be sitting here. I think it's cool.
Right.
No, I've said that before. I mean, I think what makes
BMXers, BMXers, and it's not exclusive to BMX. Anybody we discussed earlier who's passionate about something, that is applicable onward. You know, it's not just exclusive to BMX or skating or whatever certain people do. I think the happy people in life are the ones who find a way to apply that elsewhere, which you've clearly done. I'd like to think I do, Chris as well, you know, and that's something that I think, that's the BMXer in us, you know what I mean? Which I love, I'm proud of that, you know what I mean?
Me too.
I'm proud of who it's made all of us, really, you know?
And we have this bond, I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
We can sit at a table and chit-chat.
Yeah, in the middle of an airport.
I would. Get to be in an airplane and, you know. Act like we were in the trails.
Yeah, exactly. Just cutting up in front of a jet instead of in the middle of the woods.
It was crazy being on the jet, and it seemed like there's like I've waited my whole life for like no rules. Like I know the guy flying. Like it just seemed like finally this has happened. Like this is like some bucket list.
And it's all BMX. Yeah, took us all here, right?
Like, correct.
Brought us all together in the first place, and.
I also want to say thank you for your generosity.
Absolutely.
Not only pertaining to today, but as a testament to the type of person that George is, I hadn't spoken to you in like 20 years. And, you know, we weren't that close back in the day. We were, you know, friends. We knew each other. Right. But, like, I remember Chris, who did the T-shirts for the fundraising when I was in the hospital. Thank you, Chris, as well.
Of course. Of course.
I met up with Chris one day, we were having lunch, and he's like, oh, I got to give you this check, it's from George Polacek. And I'm like, George Polacek, what? And of course, the check said Worldwide Aviation, and it was a check for, you know, the recovery fund and everything. And I was like, I was really moved by that. I was, and I think we texted back and forth.
Really?
So.
And the thank you was awesome.
You're a very generous man, and I really appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. And I'm glad I get the public opportunity to say thank you.
I didn't need that. But it means a lot. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I just want to know the type of, you know, this is the type of people that we get to be associated with.
And yeah.
That was really special to me. And I thank you so much again for today. And
anything.
Yeah. For, and me as well. This is like an adult field trip. This is insane.
It's like phones aren't ringing. This is RV. Insane. This is the way I.
Dude, yeah.
You know what I mean?
This is great.
We took a road trip up to, what was it, Erie to Cleveland and down, like circled around Wheeling and then came back with that around.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Dream day.
Excellent.
Sure. Dream day.
Very
thank you so much.
Appreciate
anything.
I appreciate
it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That was
thank
fun.
You.